So I thank you for being here. As you can see, I'm not Pablo. He's not here. And for those of you that heard that I was preaching this today and still came back, I appreciate that, your support and all that. And I know what you're thinking. You're right. You're absolutely right. This is weird. This is very weird. And so you might be thinking something else, too. There may be a second thing that's maybe passing through your mind a little bit. And that is, and there's a few ways that this can be conveyed. It has a little bit of different connotation, depending on the context, how you say it. It's a few simple words. Simple words are this: we're going to hear from him. Just simple words. But you put a little different context to it. Maybe you put a question mark behind it, and you say it, we're going to hear from him? You know, it may convey a little bit of fear in that. It's like, oh, I'm not sure about this. Or you may put a period at the end of that. We're going to hear from him. And you know, there's at least three people here, the other elders, that have been waiting a while for me to be up here to preach and all that. So they may be thinking that. And there's also exclamation point. You can put an exclamation point that, and it's, we're going to hear from him. And hopefully some of my family over here are feeling that. Maybe some of my shepherding group are feeling that a little bit, you know, that there's a little excitement there. But it just kind of depends on the context and what you're feeling out there. And so some of you may be thinking, he's been an elder for 5.5 years. Why are we just now hearing from him? And not everybody ages at the same rate. You know, some don't are able to get up here and preach right away. Some takes a little longer, so it took me a little longer. So, you know, it's just like that, the Paul Masson commercial from a long time ago. We shall hear from no elder before their time. Just like, we shall drink no wine before their time. So, so to kind of dive into this a little bit here, we are starting off, we're going through Exodus, and kind of like a little skipping stone going across the water. We're skipping across Exodus a little bit, landing in a few different spots in a few different areas. And so just to recap, so as we deal with our everyday lives and things that happen to us during just our experience of life out there, we've been focusing on a few things of that we're departing from. So we're leaving from that the Israelites were heading out of. One of them is maintaining conviction. As we deal with it in just using today's terms, as we maintaining conviction in conflict, or how do we maintain our Christian convictions that we have, biblical Christian convictions, how do we maintain those when we have conflict out in the world, when we face criticism, when we face the threat of cancellation as one of the terms of the day. How do we deal with that? How do we overcome unbelief when life gets hard? And that kind of hits home a little bit this last week, as our neighbor, 44-year-old neighbor, passed away last Sunday morning. He has a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old daughter and a loving wife. So how do they, you know, understand God's love for them and maintain that and not question and not have a part of unbelief in God when they are faced with just hard life hitting them right in the face? And then understanding and maintaining our identity, our Christian identity, in today's world as well. How do we say that we're a Christian when the world is telling us that it's that, you know, identity is relative and subjective and all these things? And so I encourage you to go back. You can go back, look on the sermons and watch those as we go through today. But today is a different spiel. We're kind of changing the modes a little bit today. We're coming away from conflict, coming away from those things. And as we see within our text, where we're landing today is Exodus 27, 20 to 21, is that we're going to be starting to head towards God and his sovereignty. And so this is it's where we are today. And so the verse says, you shall command the people of Israel that they bring to you pure beaten olive oil for the light, that a lamp may regularly be set up to burn. In the tent of meeting, outside the veil that is before the testimony, Aaron and his sons shall tend to it from evening to morning. Before the Lord, it shall be a statute forever to be observed throughout their generations by the people of Israel. Yeah, I got two verses, that's it. Pablo had five or six last week. I've only got two, so we'll get into this. All right. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this time. Thank you for your word, and we thank you for just the people that are here to hear your word. Just pray that we are to, through the Holy Spirit, that we hear what you have to say to us, that we see what you have to show us, and we apply what we are given to our lives. And so now, in between the last two sermons, we have last sermon was chapter 19. And they're camped out at the bottom, a base of Mount Sinai. And then in between chapters 19 and 27, we have some events going on. So in chapters 20, they receive the Ten Commandments, and we start seeing some laws being given to them regarding altars. In chapters 21, 22, and 23, we have laws regarding slaves and restitution, social justice, Sabbath, festivals. Chapter 24 is a confirmation of the covenant that God has made. Then chapters 25, 26, and where we land at the end of chapter 27 here, we have directives, we have commands, we have orders, and how-tos on how to build the ark, how to build the table for the showbread, or for those from a while ago, the shoebread, if you're into Lawrence Welk or anything along those lines, or the gold lampstand, the tabernacle, the bronze altar, the courtyard of the tabernacle, and how, and then we reach our verses on oil and for the lampstand. So what's the big deal about a lampstand? Well, that's maybe a little bit better answered later on, but a better question maybe is, what purpose does this lampstand have? And that's an excellent question. So I'm glad somebody thought of that. But so what purpose does our lampstand have today? Well, first of all, in the Hebrew, lampstand is menorah. Menorah is a lampstand. And whenever I've always heard the word menorah, I've always thought of Hanukkah. A menorah is for Hanukkah. And that's not exactly correct, as I learned through this. Menorah is just simply just a lampstand, and there can be many different constructions of that. And there were different types. The Hanukkah menorah was built with nine lamps, or nine lights, would have nine lights. And as we see in starting in chapter 25, verses 31 to 39, and especially the first two verses, we see that we have, starting in verse 31, you shall make a lampstand of pure gold. The lampstand shall be made of hammered work. Its base, its stem, its cups, its calyxes, and its flower shall be of one piece with it. And there shall be six branches going out of its sides, three branches of the lampstand out one side, and three branches of the lampstand out the other side of it. Those instructions would indicate that you had seven lights. So you have what some people call the temple menorah, which is what some people call this. You have the Western menorah that had different purposes in there. And so you had different types of lampstands, different types of menorahs that were constructed. And so, as we see later on in the last few verses up there, we see that the lampstand was to give light to the space in front of it. And in the same lampstand as we see in 7, that it's not the same lampstand in both. Some would say no. Some would say yes, some would say no. It's kind of a whole other issue. If you want to go down that path, Josephus talked about there being three lights. And well, what did three lights mean? Did it mean three different lampstands? Did it mean three lights on one lampstand? You see in verse 27 that there is talk about the light and a light. Some people say, well, they just had one lamp going, one light going, or many. So, but that's, if you want to go down a little other rabbit hole, you know, that is great for further study, but we're going to go with the lamp just being of the lampstand itself. And so what, as we're seeing here, the directions for the maintenance of the lampstand and the placement of the lampstand, where it was to be within the tabernacle and the forecourt in front of the veil that held the ark, the Holy of Holies. And so the reason isn't specifically laid out, but we do see here, we see that Aaron is to, he's to keep it lit from evening till morning. We're starting to see how the law and ritual ceremony, the beginnings of works that was and is the basis of Jewish faith that requires sacrifice after sacrifice. So you see this work and kind of guidance and order coming into their lives that they are supposed to do things in a certain manner. Well, back to our lampstand here. So, excuse me, getting a little dry. So our lampstand here, it had function. It held and provided light. It was ceremonial. And as our verses say, it shall be a statute forever to be observed throughout their generations by the people of Israel. And it was representational. And I read one Jewish commentary. It said that as it burned in front of the holy ark, it represented the light of the Torah, the light of God's instruction, which illuminates us at all times. And so the light is also a reminder of the presence of God long after the cloud and the fire were no longer going to be present with them. So with the people, as mentioned in Exodus 13, verse 20 to 22, it says, "And they moved on from Succoth and encamped at Etham, and on the edge of the wilderness, and the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from them before the people until after they crossed the Jordan and entered the land, and then the light soon thereafter at light by night departed. But they would have this lamp lit for all generations to remind them of God and how he led them by light at nighttime." And so even though as we continue through these times, we eventually see that Israel, they continue to complain about their predicament and repeat the refrain that if they were only in Egypt, that whatever they were facing now wouldn't be with them. The ensuing chapters, we do see them being led towards something by light that the instructions and guidance contained within the verses and the law gave them direction to head towards God. So, but this here is the first time that the lampstand is mentioned. This is the first mentioning of it. And so it's established of the law and the ceremony. And so they're heading towards the sovereignty of God. And so with the lampstand, we're going to be focusing a bit more on light. And so focusing on light, that's a nice segue to head into Dr. Hedberg and his video talking about being afraid of light. So please watch the video.
Light teaches. Light tells a story that we are to become something that we're not, to rise to a level that we're not, to go beyond where we are. That's what truth is. That's what light is all about. It's scary. It's the unknown. It's going into an unknown area, out of darkness and into light. So you're going into something that you're not familiar with and that you're not comfortable with. So truth or light, if I use the word interchangeably, really says to us, you have to live to a higher level of living. You have to live beyond yourself. You have to live beyond your comfort zone. You have to live beyond what is the day-to-day experience and reach out into the unknown and reach out into an area of life that is new. And from that, you become more creative, become more open, you become more knowledgeable, you become more skilled, you become more interactive, you become more comfortable, you become more free, you become more of a person in the life of other people. Not to judge yourself. Who brings you to other people? Touches other people's lives. Without any, just very self-centered, you're onto yourself, and you need yourself.
All right. Well, thanks to Dr. Hedberg for giving us some of these videos. It gives us kind of a current day perspective a little bit and what he sees as a professional psychologist in his day-to-day life. And so if we harken back to a little bit to the beginning where he's talking about light and or the that we're going to hear from him having some different connotations. Light can have some different, I'm going to say different meanings, but it can have a deeper meaning and some different connotations depend on the perspective and your emphasis on what you're looking at. And so through the Bible, we see that throughout the Bible, that depending on your version or your translation, light is mentioned anywhere from 229 or so times up to 272 times throughout the entirety of the Bible. About 60% of those references occur in the Old Testament, remaining 40 or so. I didn't actually do the math, but it was a guess. And so the rest of it's in the New Testament. And it appears in at least 38 of the 66 books throughout the Bible. And so we're just going to look at a few verses that talk about light, and then just kind of look at a deeper context. Remembering what Dr. Hedberg, what he's talking about with the light being truth, shedding light into the little corners of a life that we don't necessarily maybe want it to be there, and that being a little scary, but just a different connotation on light itself. And so as we look at what the light is, necessarily not what afraid of light in general, but if the light, we're going to take a look. We're going to look right at the beginning of the Bible. Genesis 1, verses 1 through 3. And so in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters, and God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. I'm going to skip ahead to Psalms 119 and verses 105. We see that your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Same chapter 119, but verse 130 says, the unfolding of your words gives light. It imparts understanding to the simple. And we skip all the way to the end of the Bible, Revelation 22, verse 5. It says, and night will be no more. They will need no light of lamp of sun or sun, for the Lord God will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. If we back up a little bit, we're going to go back into John, first chapter of John. We've got verses 4 through 5. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And then backing up a little bit more, kind of talking about how what fear was within the Bible, actually a little bit, fear of light in the Bible. We have Job 24, verses 13 to 17. And there are those who rebel against the light, who are not acquainted with its ways, and do not stay in its paths. The murderer rises before it is light, that he may kill the poor and needy. And in the night he is like a thief. The eye of the adulterer who waits for twilight, saying, no one will see me, and he veils his face. In the dark, they dig through houses. By day, they shut themselves up. They do not know the light. For deep darkness is mourning to all of them, for they are friends with the terrors of deep darkness. And so at this point in the sermon, you may be wondering, okay, so what does this mean to me? In today's world, what does all this have for us today within the context of what we're talking about? And that's a perfect question, because that's question three. What does a sermon mean to me? And so part of the answer to that comes from the verse or the commentary they read from the Jewish commentator early on. As it burned in front of the holy ark, talking about the lampstand, it represented the light of the Torah, the light of God's instruction, which illuminates all us all at all times. And so there seems to be a little bit of a deeper connotation to what he's saying about light, rather than just light that we see. Light has become so ubiquitous since Thomas Edison and the light bulb and electricity. You just flip the light on so we can see. Yeah, or the sun is especially here in the valley, burns brightly. That's for sure. So, but there may be just looking at a little bit of a different connotation. And so, kind of walk through that a little bit. In the words of Fire Marshal Bill, let me show you something. So up here, what we have on the left is the top line in each of the rows is the current Hebrew alphabet. And so you see the numbers next to each of the letters. Below that is kind of the English phonetic spelling to how to say the words. You have bet, lamed, kaf, yod, tet, chet, those things. And then you have the symbols. I will say symbols because the ancient Hebrew alphabet, which is the third line down, was more of a pictographic type alphabet versus actual letters, which is more of today's, the current Hebrew alphabet. And then below that, we see some definitions. So especially of the pictographs, the letters held connotation. So if we look at second row down to the far left, Lamed, you see a little kind of a relaxing J, a J that's kind of kicking backwards. Well, that's the shepherd's staff. So that letter would indicate shepherd or leading or teaching, taking you to and from place. Or you have Kaf, the next one, which is palm. And so in order to see the palm, you have to open your hand. So Lamed has this indication of opening and your hand being open. And then whenever you doorman would let somebody in, you allow them to go through. You're showing your palm to allow people to go in front of you or things along those lines. So the letters have context to what the words mean. It's not just L-I-G-H-T. There's a deeper meaning to it. And so light in ancient Hebrew was or. And so that was how you pronounced light was or. Now, or has a root word. A lot of Greek and Hebrew words, they start off with a root word. And so the root word for or, we put on our good pirate's head, is R. But it's, you know, it's just pronounced R. And so what is R? What is the meaning of the word R? And so it is spelled with the Aleph, as you can see on the upper left, and then way down at the bottom is Resh. And so when you read Hebrew, you read from right to left. We don't read it from left to right as we do in English. It's read from right to left. So you have the Aleph and the Resh, or R, which is more coincidence than it is necessarily the actual using A and the R, but that is the root word. And so what does that mean? What does R mean? It stands, the actual noun for R is box. The verb of it is to organize or bring order to. And then you have this implied connotation of strength from above and leading from the top. And so what that kind of gets into is, say you're moving someplace and you need to get there and you're putting your stuff into a moving van. Well, if you just throw everything into the van unboxed, you're going to have chaos. You're going to have just stuff just scattered everywhere. And so by taking your stuff and putting it into a box, you're organizing that stuff and you're packing it into your shed so that when you get there, it's organized. You know right where it goes. It's labeled. This goes to the kitchen. This goes to the dining room. This goes over there. So you have that organization. And being that you are in a position above that box, you're putting things into that box. So it's that organization from above, the strength from above. You're leading your stuff from above, putting it into a box so that it stays organized. Okay, so how do we get from R to OR? And so OR is spelled this way. And, you know, as a phonetical kind of spelling for O-A-R, but we see the resh and the which up there is vav, but it was at the time was waw, W-A-W. What is basically an ox head. So we see that we have, looking at the alphabet, you have the ox head, which led with strength, was a leader. With the resh, you have head, the authority, first. And then you add in of attaching something. The vav or wa is a nail or a tent peg. And you say, well, that looks more like a Y. Well, yes, it does, but see, that nail looks more like my nails when I take them out from when I build something, and I mess it up, and I pull it out, and I've got the Ys are going in crazy, crazy, crazy directions. So it's just, or it's like I said, a tent peg. But it secures, it adds. So you've got, it attaches, it increases, adds permanence. So by tying up your tent, it would add permanence to it. And so when you get the context from that, is that you have order that is enduring and attached to all things. You get strength from above that is permanent and affects all things. And so that is light to the ancient Hebrews, is that it is this thing that is out there, the strength from above, as sun would be coming down, but it's strength from above that's permanent and affects all things. Now, in the ancient times, but you have in about the third century to second century BC, you had a group of Jewish scholars that got together, and they wanted to make the Torah a little bit more readable to a wider group of people. And so at that time, the common language was Greek. And so they translated the Torah into Greek, which became what some of us know as the Septuagint. And so in the Septuagint, you have, it's primarily Greek. And so the Greek word for light is phos, as we see on the right. And then that's the spelling for the Greek word over on the left. And we have phos. And so when you see back in Genesis 1 and you read the Septuagint, the Greek, you would see the word phos. When you read all throughout, anywhere throughout the Bible, whether you're reading ancient Hebrew, you're reading the Greek versions, it would either have or it would have phos, and it was the same word all throughout out the Bible. But, and that can kind of make it seem like, well, maybe light isn't that special. It's kind of ubiquitous to this. But when you put in that extra connotation of it, light being strength from above that affects all things and is permanent, it gives you a different reading when you read the verses. So one verse that I left out, one more verse up here, and we'll
Christina?